Genesis chapter 9, verses 1 through 17. Here we go. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The fear of you and the terror of you will be on every beast of the earth, on every bird of the sky, with everything that creeps on the ground, and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are given. Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you as I gave the green plant. Only you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. Surely I will require your life blood. From every beast I will require it, and from every man, from every man's brother, I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For he is in the image of God, he made man. As for you, be fruitful and multiply, populate the earth abundantly and multiply in it." Then God spoke to Noah and to his sons with him, saying, "Now behold, I myself do establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you, of all that comes out of the ark, even every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you and all flesh. Never again be cut off by the water of the flood, neither shall there again be a flood to destroy the earth." God said, "This is a sign of the covenant which I am making between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all successive generations. I set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of a covenant between me and the earth. It shall come about when I bring about a cloud over the earth that the bow will be seen in the cloud, and I will remember my covenant which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And never again shall the water become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the cloud, then I will look upon it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth." And God said to Noah, "This is a sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is on earth." Is this covenant made with us too? Yes. So we're going to go back to chapter 8, verse 20. And we read that here we have the flood. Noah, at the very beginning of the flood, when God told him to build this ark, he built it out in the desert, probably endured 120 years of ridicule for building this ark in the middle of the desert. He did everything God had commanded him. He showed great faith. And then on the day when God appoints them, they go into the ark. God closes the ark. And two chapters later, after the flood, it's a year to the day that God opens the doors. God opens the doors. And Noah comes out. And what is the first thing that Noah does? I probably would have kissed the ground. Because you're shut up in this ark. You didn't close the door. It's been locked from the outside. You have to trust God that he's going to open it from the outside, because there's no doorknob. And they've been floating for a year now. What would that be like? Is he going to show up? He didn't tell us how long we're going to be in this thing. And what is the first thing Noah does? He builds an altar to the Lord and took of every clean animal and every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. If you want to read about clean animals and unclean animals, go to Leviticus 11 and start reading for about 8 chapters, and you'll read all about clean and unclean animals. I'm not going to go into it. But why did God have Noah take 7 of the clean animals into the ark? No, to make sure that they would well populate the earth, right? And what does Noah do? He risks 1/7 of what's going to populate the earth in the sacrifice. Did God command him to do this? No. What was it, first of all? It was an offering of thanksgiving. He was telling God, "Thank you for what you've done." But secondly, Noah, being 600 years old, had 600 years in which to sin. It says he alone was found righteous, but does that mean that he was perfect, that he had never sinned in his life? No, Noah had sinned, and he had sinned a lot. In fact, right after this, he gets drunk, and we find the man of righteousness drunk and uncovered. And so he knows that he's still going to have to face what? Death. And his sons are going to have to face death. The curse is still upon them. So the second thing he does, the second meaning of this, it's not only thanksgiving, but he takes and he makes an offering. And we know that the Old Testament is a picture of who? Jesus. So what do we see a picture of in Noah's offering? A picture of Jesus Christ being offered. an offering that will, for once and for all, take the judgment of God and take it out of the way. The judgment that should have rightly fell on us, every one of us, and I don't care who you are, how good you think you've been, the judgment of God rightly falls on us. And Jesus says, no, I stand in your place and I take the judgment upon myself. And so it's a picture of Jesus. Let me read from chapter 8 again. It says, the Lord smelled the soothing aroma. And the Lord said to himself, I will never again curse the ground on account of man. Noah had a barbecue. He took some birds and he cooked them over fire. Isn't that great in summer, the first barbecue that's out in the neighborhood? And you smell that steak sizzling on the grill. And the juice is dripping off the steak and hitting the fire and bursting into flames. And the aroma goes up and it wafts through your windows and you go, how come they haven't invited me? And what does Noah do? He has a barbecue for God. The soothing aroma goes up to God. And God notices and he's pleased. Take a look at Ephesians 5:2. We read these words. Beginning with verse 1, therefore be imitators of God as beloved children. And walk in love, just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma. Jesus was a fragrant aroma to God, his offering. And you know the words here, that phrase, fragrant aroma, the Greek words there, in the Greek version of the Old Testament, it's the exact phrase in our text in Genesis. And so we have this link that as Noah made this offering, he knew that he had been brought through the judgment of God on all mankind. All mankind had been destroyed. Now it was a brand new day, but he knew that he was still sinful. And he said, I'm still looking forward to what's coming, to the sacrifice that will meet our sins. And then what does God say? He says, I will never again curse the ground on account of man, for the intent of man is evil from his youth. Now, wait a minute. I thought that's exactly why he destroyed all of human being, because the intent of their thoughts was evil from the time they were little. From the time their children is the actual word here. So what is God saying? I will never again curse the ground on account of man because the intent of man's heart is evil from his youth. Okay, he did it once. He got the message across to us. What would he have to do if he did this again? He'd have to do it and over again. Every successive generation, we get so evil, okay, got to wipe them out. 100 years later, oh, another flood, wipe them out. Save 8, another flood, wipe them out. Are your thoughts evil at times? Oh, Lord, for a new mind. We have the opportunity to be renewing our minds at this point. And then there's this very comforting words. He says, I will never again curse the ground on account of man. So he's going to not curse the ground through the flood. And then he says, and I will never again destroy every living thing as I have done. And then look at, while the earth remains, seed time and harvest and cold and heat and summer and winter and day and night shall not cease. Global warming? Global warming is going to happen so there will be no more cold. What does this text promise us? As long as the earth remains, there will be cold and heat, seed time and harvest, and summer and winter, and day and night. There's a constancy to creation then. He promises us that every morning the sun will be there when we wake up. That in the fall, that the time of planting for the harvest, they planted in the fall. And then the seeds germinated through the winter months, and then they again planted a second crop in January, and then in early April or May, they would start the harvest. And the harvest, depending on what it was, wheat in the summer, but some of the products would be harvested in the spring, and then on into late August and late September, they would be harvesting different kinds of things that they were growing. And he promises us that it will never cease until the earth is gone. And then it says, God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, and now we get some restoration. The creation had gone so afoul that God destroyed everyone but these eight people. Now, get this, God's starting over. He's kind of renegotiating with Noah. And he says this, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." Once again, he's bringing from Genesis chapter 2 to be fruitful. Young people, this is a direction to you. God's command to you is to be fruitful. But in what context is it to be fruitful? In the context of marriage and nowhere else. So this text tells me something about this thing we call sex. What's this text tell you about sex within the confines of marriage? God is telling us to go out and have fun in the confines of marriage. And that's the best place, is it not? And be fruitful and multiply. Does he give that command again? Has that command been rescinded? What is the world trying to tell us? Overpopulation. We can't sustain it. We got to stop. We got to cut back. And I'm not aware of anywhere where this command has been rescinded from the human race. So the first blessing is go out and in marriage be fruitful and multiply. The second thing, the fear of you and the terror of you will be on every beast of the earth and on every bird of the sky, which everything that creeps on the ground, and all fish of the sea into your hand they are given. Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. So there's a mercy to the animals, because up until this point, human beings didn't eat any animals and probably hadn't even entered their mind that they could, right? You can't eat those things. Like, do you like eating like raw fish? Some of you have learned to eat raw fish, but I bet you 20 years ago you would have thought, no, that's not edible. So they didn't think about animals as being edible until this day when God says, now you can eat animals. But he gives mercy to the animals because up to that point, animals had no fear of man, according to this text. And so if you had no fear of man and they were going to eat you, you'd learn it fast, but God actually inbred into the animals now. He changed them, however much your faith can believe. I believe he changed their programming, their instinct, and now they were afraid of human beings. And that gave them mercy because they would run away. It would give us a little work. So how is this a blessing? Well, up until this point, remember the curse? You had to raise your food by the sweat of your brow, and all of your days would be toil trying to grow your food. And now he gives them a little bit easier way to get food. You can start eating the animals. Which is easier? Hoeing and getting ground ready and then tilling it, then planting the seed, then weeding it, caring for it, and finally harvesting it so that you can have some food, or going out and shooting a deer? Which is easier? The deer. So suddenly they had a source of food that was much easier. And so it came across as a blessing. Third thing he changes or he institutes with these human beings. Verse 4, only you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is its blood. All through the Bible, the life is in the blood. So when you spill out your blood, what are you pouring out? Your very life. If you pour out enough of it, what happens to you? You die. You've poured out your life. Surely I will require your lifeblood. From every beast I will require it, and from every man, from every man's brother, I will require the life of man. And what is he talking about here? This is an obscure verse. I will require life blood. It explains it in the next verse. Whoever sheds man's blood, by his blood shall it be shed. For in the image of God he made man. So first of all, this idea that I will require man's blood from him, it's still the penalty of the curse, right? That everyone will face death. But also, if I kill a man unjustly, murder and killing in the Bible are two different things in the Old Testament. There are times that we are given to kill, and we're going to see it, that is not murder, right? I mean, God commands them to kill in war, and he never considers that breaking the commandment of murder. We know that. So, but what about animals? This is also protecting the animals, to say that if you go about unjustly killing animals and torturing them, it will be required of you. Some suggest that here. And I think, well, that's weird. That sounds like a very modern interpretation. But let me ask you, does God care about the animals? Yes. So is he going to provide a little protection from the evil human beings on the planet for the animals. Yeah, so it says to us, even though you get to eat the animals, still treat them with care. And then he establishes the grounds for government. If somebody kills a man, that person will forfeit their life. And we're doing it to this day. Right now we're waiting on a verdict for this man who, I don't remember where it was, he went into a house and killed a doctor's wife and her two daughters. Do you remember what state that was in? Connecticut. And they're waiting to see if he's going to get the death penalty or not. According to this text, what does he get? The death penalty. With the new covenant, I'm not going to go into all of this, but with the new covenant, we see some, at least moderation of that. What's it tell you then? Why is it wrong to take another human life, according to the text? Because we are made in the image of God. And I don't care how evil a person has been, are they still made in the image of God? Does God still love them? Does God still hope that they will turn and repent? Yes. But there is basically the basis for saying eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, a man's life for a man's life. And then it says, again, he rephrases, populate the earth abundantly and multiply in it if you didn't get it the first time. Verse 8, then God spoke to Noah and to his sons and him, saying, now behold, I myself do establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you. Does that include us? Do you know that we are all related to each other through Noah? There's not a person in this room that isn't related to each other through Noah and his wife. So live with it. I'm your relative. Now, behold, I myself do establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, with every living creature that is with you, the birds of the, and the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you, and all of that comes out of the ark, even every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you, and all flesh shall never again be cut off by the water of the flood, neither shall again be a flood to destroy the earth. So what's his promise to us in this covenant? That he will never flood the earth and destroy all life. And then he puts a sign. It says, God said, this is a sign of the covenant which I'm making between me and you and every living creature that is with you. It's a memorial to remind us of this covenant for all successive generations. I set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of a covenant between me and the earth. It shall come about when I bring a cloud upon the earth, that the bow will be seen in the cloud, and I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every creature of all flesh. And never again shall water become a flood to destroy all flesh. I was coming back from Silverdale last week, and I was coming down Wagga Way. It's the speed trap hill. You know what I'm talking about? At the bottom, they sit on Central Valley Road, and they pull you over and give you tickets. I know some of us here have received tickets on that very speed trap hill. I was coming down that hill, and right as I got underneath that bridge, watching my speedometer, I looked up, and there was a rainbow, full. It was a full rainbow. And I didn't realize this, but do you know that every rainbow has two rainbows? One, and then one on top. And usually the one on top we can't see because it's too dim for our eyes. But on a really clear day, you get that double rainbow. So he sets that bow. And as I saw it, I remembered this text because we've been studying it in Sunday school too. And I thought, what a nice text. Right? Some people conjecture the rainbow was always there because we know that it's a physical thing of water. And when light shines through water, it makes a rainbow no matter what. And so they say that the rainbow had always been there. And so God just said, adapted the rainbow to fit his promise. Well, what would that be like? All these years you had a rainbow, and now God says, okay, see the rainbow that I'm putting up there? That's to remind you that I'm never going to do this again. Well, wait a minute, it's always been there. So either there's two possibilities. Prior to the flood, it didn't rain, and some people think that there was a canopy of water around the earth that protected us from UV rays, and that's what produced the pressure. That's what protected us from the ultraviolet rays, and so that's what accounts for people living 900 years, for large animals, lots of produce, lots of food, all that kind of stuff. So if it had never rained, could there have been a rainbow? No. And now suddenly it starts raining and the sun shines and and you get this rainbow appearing. I think that God actually changed physics myself. That's what my faith says, that God can change physics. Who came up with the laws in the first place? So can't he just kind of go and create something in physics that wasn't there before? How small is your God? He can't do that. He can't violate his own laws. Well, wait a minute. He made all the laws of physics and of chemistry and of... My faith is pretty simple. I just say, well, for the first time, they saw a rainbow. And then every time after that, anytime it rained, and there was a cloud in the sky, and the sun was shining through that rain coming down, and it produces this beautiful rainbow. He's reminding us, he's reminding them that he will never again destroy the earth by flood. But he will not destroy it again until it's destroyed by fire. Is he a faithful God? So has he made a promise to us? God is faithful. What was Noah's response? What do you see in Noah all through this story? Was he a perfect man? No. But what did he have? Faith. He trusted God.